I would like to add a few comments to what Shirley said about trapping. At most theosophical meetings, we intend to discuss something which is of importance. Certainly this morning, I believe we are going to talk about something which is important for ourselves and for humanity as a whole. Presumably, anyone who speaks, speaks in order that others may consider what is said. It is worthwhile ponder over it. Not, we don't speak in order to be appreciated or congratulated. It has no meaning. And sometimes there may be a talk which creates a certain atmosphere. I'm sure you will agree with me that when Bev spoke yesterday morning, it created a certain atmosphere, it made us think about certain things, and then it ends abruptly with this noise of clapping. So we are brought down to earth, so to speak, rather brutally. But if instead of that, we can carry with us something of what has come into our minds and hearts, ponder over that, it may serve our purpose better. Brother Raja, that is our former president, Mr. Jinarajadasa, had suggested long ago that those who want to express appreciation may just wave their hand, which they do in certain countries after theosophical meeting. It has become the theosophical way, not the usual clapping. Well, if one feels like it, one can adopt that. It does not very much matter what way one wants to appreciate, but appreciation to me doesn't seem to be the important thing. The important thing is that we should give our serious consideration to certain ideas or truths which are put before us. Unless, of course, it's the entire gathering is meant for something else. If you have a humorous session or an entertainment in the evening, that's quite a different matter. But perhaps there is some difference between an entertainment and a theosophical talk. Now let us go on to the main subject. Poor, poor humanity. Was the comment made by one of the Mahatmas more than 100 years ago. And he said humanity is like a body in which the limbs are continually at war with each other. Can such a body ever be healthy? Humanity has never been in a healthy condition. Of course, there are developments which have been helpful. Today, the conditions, hygienic conditions are much better than they were before, in any of the preceding centuries perhaps. Although there is evidence in the archaeological remains of ancient civilizations, of highly developed system of sanitation, still we can congratulate ourselves upon this, upon the aptitude with which we have learned many things, the conveniences which we have provided for ourselves, the adventures that have been undertaken, space exploration or whatever. And that general love of liberty, although liberty is being violated constantly in many parts of the world, there is a growing feeling that freedom is essential for all people. So there are developments which are on the whole beneficial. Yet, we are faced with extraordinarily difficult problems. We can say that there are challenges of an unprecedented nature facing us today. Time being, specially pointed out that when challenges are not faced and adequately met by any civilization, it collapses. And are we aware today of what is the challenge facing us? This is very important because the whole of human society as it is at present may disintegrate if we do not meet or recognize the challenge. Because not just time-based theory, it's in the whole of nature that every species and perhaps every individual survives and progresses if he is able to meet the challenges near him, around him, in a correct way. If a deer grazing in the forest is not sufficiently alert to the noises and smells around and does not spot immediately a challenge in the shape of a tiger which may be approaching, that would be the end of the deer. This is in nature. And what holds true there, perhaps is true for a whole people. And today, it may be true for the whole of humanity. We know, most of us, about the growing threat of population. The utter disaster which will be the result of a global war. The pollution of the elements, the breaking of the ozone layer, the decimation of the Brazilian forest, In other words, our disregard of nature may also pose a very serious danger, more serious perhaps than most people realize, for what climatic changes and other problems will arise, no one quite knows. Everybody is making a guess. But serious as these situations are, including the great inequality which exists there, exists in the world, which I think is also a challenge, perhaps not of the same order. Serious although these are, we do not all take them to heart. We think about them a little. And there are vast numbers of human beings who don't even think about them. They don't care. All that people are interested in is immediate satisfaction. And this is tantamount to not even recognizing that we are in a crisis. Not being aware of danger. Like the deer which does not smell or hear danger approaching. And most of the world goes on. But it has to become aware. We have to look further, because obviously it is not enough to recognize that war today is more dangerous than it ever was. Not only dangerous, but tragic. It's not enough to realize this. We don't always see how tragic war is, because it becomes a kind of a news. And we are too accustomed to this type of news to feel the horror of it. Of course, when we see the Kurdish people on television, for the moment, we are affected. But there are many others besides the Kurdish people who are suffering and who may suffer in war. There's this terrible state of strife in Central America, Cambodia, Ireland, between Israel and the Arabs, in many places, fighting, which means people are mutilated, homes are destroyed, children lose their parents. Have you read descriptions of hospitals where soldiers return from war? It's agonizing. But it's not only the combatants, the soldiers, who suffer now, but a vast number of other people. And war now means that nobody can be safe. this Gulf War could have become a global conflagration. Even if it didn't, we know that the oil slick could be a terrible thing for neighboring countries. But if nuclear, bacterial, chemical weapons had been used, many people who are not involved in the war would be affected. When the disaster took place in Chernobyl, I happened to be in Germany, but much farther in Sweden and everywhere, people felt threatened. They had to throw away their milk and vegetables and fruit for the whole of the world becomes poisoned, polluted, and viruses can be carried very easily to wide areas. So perhaps nobody can escape, and it endangers the economy. It creates political instability everywhere else because the world has become so connected up, interlocked in the present day. So the harm done somewhere affects faraway regions. That is the situation. And that is true of many other things. We spoke about inequality. We can't say, let the millions in some other continent remain poor, or let the homeless in New York or somewhere else die in whatever way they can. Because sooner or later, the millions of people who are deprived are going to do something about their situation. And as we said, since the whole world is so closely connected now, we cannot afford to neglect any part of that world. This was the thesis of, who was that German? Grunt? Yes. That the affluent nations cannot afford to neglect the poverty-stricken ones. Or the rich people in any country ignore the poor. Nor can we ignore the population question, the pollution question. They are all connected with each other. I don't want to waste too much time on this, but I think it is necessary for us to think over this. But is this the real danger for humanity? Is this the challenge, if we don't like the word danger? Because if we think that this is what we have to deal with, then we do the usual thing. To end war, we may fight another war, which is a most foolish thing that one can do. The First World War was supposed to be a war to end all wars. And people have always thought this, that violence can put an end to violence. And, or we go around busily, we means part of humanity, talking about peace plans, the new world order, which means a world order which suits ourselves, a peace which will give us the upper hand. That's how all peace treaties have been made. Or temporary truces of various kinds. There's no difference between truce and the treaty, because all treaties are ultimately pieces of paper. We know how alliances are made and disregarded. And peace has never come upon earth because we never go to the root of the matter. And therefore, we never meet the challenge adequately. In fact, if you speak about going to the fundamentals, people feel put off because they feel it's all too much, too far away, abstract, while it is the most practical thing. How many peace treaties have been made? How many times have war ended, and yet war has begun again? Because as the preamble to the UNESCO said so many years ago, war begins in the minds of men. Begins, continues, aggravates, everything happens in the mind. And we never go to that. We want only to tinker around with them. If we take the pollution problem, this kind of continuing harm we do to the wonderful elements which have been provided on this beautiful earth, what is the behind it? Can we end it by cleaning up? This is one of the ironies of modern life, that we pollute the water and then we purify it to drink. We advertise tobacco and let people poison themselves and become sick, and then we establish hospitals to cure them. So, can the ecological and environmental situation be improved merely by doing odd little things here and there? What is the real cause of it? Can the poisoning of the earth come to an end if we continue to be so terribly greedy? The modern world is perhaps the greediest in many centuries, because we have so many things that our desires are stimulated. We want more things. I think one of the most distressing things in the present day is to go to a shopping area. And people are greedily buying, looking at things with eyes which are wanting all the time. Looking at objects which we don't need. Replacing good things simply because we want something newer, a different style. Something more fashionable. Discarding clothes which could last for several years because we want to be smarter. Vanity, all is vanity, perhaps. But we needn't go into the moral question. The question is, if we continue to want more, more pleasure, more entertainment, more objects, can we ever stop the pollution of the earth? and the poisoning of our own selves, the destruction of various forms of life, which may also endanger our lives. Can we encourage violence for apparently good purposes to obtain knowledge, which we do? We believe in violence and then have peace, have civilization. Our cities have ceased to be civilized because people are afraid of going out after the dark. Sometimes it seems as if the poor countries are better, safer. But there is violence even in daytime in certain cities. And we are encouraging violence everywhere, through the television, through the cinema. We teach children to be cruel to animals in laboratories, in schools. We do the most atrocious things to animals in the intensive farms and the many laboratories. In other words, we teach people to become callous and hard of heart. There are people who believe that there is such a thing as righteous war. Every country believes it has right on its side. They can always find the arguments, like lawyers in a court of law. Every criminal has a lawyer to defend him, who will find the reasons to justify the crime. There are always condoning factors. So every country thinks it is right. And every country, every group believes that because right is on their side, that the fighting, the violence they do is justified. But without discussing who is right, is it not a fact that war, violence, brutalizes the mind? It makes it indifferent to the injury, the suffering of others. So it has that effect. And if we are cruel to other creatures, to animals, to birds, we build cruelty into our hearts. And is it surprising then that that callousness is at work in relation with other human beings? Hitler had only to say that the Jews were vermin, and then anything could be done to the Jews. At the end of the last war, there were Japanese camps where they said the prisoners, British and other people, were logs of wood. They used a Japanese term meaning logs of wood. This is on record. So as long as you have declared them to be logs of wood, then any treatment is all right. So you can think of animals as matter, and you can think of human beings as animals. And so it's just a step, and you can do diabolical things to human beings, because it's all related. So we teach this callousness, we encourage greed, we advocate violence in the name of justice, and that is where we have brought the world. I think this is very important to see, that the causes are not outside, nor can the solutions be outside. That is, regulating or cleaning or making treaties, bringing armies to control, or whatever, which is what we have always been doing. And always the same problems continue. The problem of conflict, the problem of oppression, of cruelty. At the personal level also, it's the same story in a minor way, because the same condition is within ourselves. Ourselves means all of humanity, including the present company. Because all of us have aggression. We speak sometimes in unkind ways. We have thoughts of ill will towards others. We are most often totally indifferent to the predicament of our fellow creatures. I won't say fellow human beings, but all creatures, whether human or otherwise. We are so self-preoccupied. We give very little thought to this. Now, I think it is the work of the Theosophical Society to point to the fact that the real challenge is inside the psyche of the human being. In his selfishness, which takes a number of different forms, his avarice and cupidity, his aggression, his callousness, his pride, the differences he creates, putting some people low down, raising others. All these tendencies are inside the human mind. And this is the problem. And if we don't bring about a change in that mind, then all other changes are temporary, which is so obvious. As we said, every treaty after a time is thrown out. Every revolution which brings hope to people in its turn becomes a source of tyranny. Every religion which began with words of wisdom ultimately becomes a form of oppression and enslavement of people's minds. So, all those outer things don't work, because inside we remain the same. And this is the one thing that we don't want to look at. Even when speaking to members of the Theosophical Society, I am sad to say that there are people who will come up and declare that humanity cannot change. Selfishness is ingrained. If that is so, why be in the Theosophical Society? It is only because we know that humanity can change and must change inwardly, become free of all these poisons inside, that we are members of the Theosophical Society, or should be. And this is the main work of the society, this pioneering work. In the early days, that verse was quoted, "Does the road wind uphill all the way?" Yes, it does. And you must be prepared to climb it all the way. It is hard. People will not respond quickly, but we cannot give up. And we cannot go to lesser things. We can, for a little while, as a distraction, But that must not be the central work of the society. The central work of the society must be to point to this grave challenge which humanity faces within its own psyche, its consciousness. If we want to quote H.P.B., whose memory we honor this year, the time has come, the crisis is forcing humanity to look at itself and change from being animal man to divine man. And if the Theosophical Society doesn't lead the way, then what is it for? It was founded and it exists in order to try its best to aid poor humanity. It struggles along in the same old way, fixed in its patterns, tinkering, as we said, with little outer things, and always hoping that somewhere happiness and peace is around the corner. But that's all humanity has done so far. But the advance of technology, science and technology, is perhaps part of the evolutionary plan. And it is bringing the world to a crisis. In our individual lives, sometimes it's only when we are knocked by a crisis that we really begin to be thoughtful people. Otherwise, we are floating along the current of our self-preoccupations and the search for pleasure. It's only when there is a serious pain, sorrow, that many people begin to question and ask, what is life about? Why do I suffer? What is suffering? Before that, they never think. So perhaps this crisis which we face, if we realize it is a crisis, as a challenge, will force us to go to the deeper cause, which is inside ourselves. Yesterday, Bev mentioned it, but I might add here that for ages in the Eastern tradition, they said the enemies of the human being are inside, not outside. And they are his desire or greed, his anger and aggression, and so on. And unless he deals with them, the world can only go down the slippery slope of suffering. Because there may be something in the theory that there is a series of ages, each one a little worse than another. For the simple reason that most people are conform very easily. It is the lazy way. We fall into a pattern. So, we know in many countries there is widespread corruption. So, most individuals say, this is the way. I cannot do otherwise. So, I also follow the pattern. Now, when individuals follow that pattern, then the corruption becomes aggravated. And the pressure on the individual is still greater. It's the same with violence. You read the statistics about gun sales, the argument over possession of guns in the United States. They all say, there's violence, so I must have the right to own a gun. So everybody has the right to own not only a gun, but 20 guns if he wants, including automatic weapons and assault rifles and whatnot. And do people keep guns for nothing? The Dalai Lama said in the Besant lecture which he delivered at the last international convention, when people sold arms to Iraq, did they think that they would play music with them? So we see that people follow a pattern. Therefore, when there is violence, they adopt violence as their way of life. When there is corruption, they feel there is no other way except corruption. When there is disorder, become part of the disorder. And so it gets worse and worse and worse. Unless a few people at least see and say, we are going to act differently, think differently. And that is what the theosophist must be. Recognizing that the challenge, the real challenge is within. Now, we can go a little further and notice certain things. That today, there is no solution for any problem which is which can be a solution which suits a particular people, which is to the advantage of one nation. Think of the problem of pollution. The rivers run through many countries. The air belongs to everybody. If you poison the earth with nuclear radiation, it may affect all the world. So, everything affects everybody else. So, we cannot think of solutions in fragmented ways. We have to think of solutions which are good for everybody in the present world. So this global thinking is unavoidable. We have to think that we have a common destiny. We cannot do harm to another without harming ourselves and vice versa. So we are all linked together. This is very important. And theosophy, no doubt, should make us see this very easily. Secondly, there is no short-term solution for anything. We are always merely thinking of the immediate advantage, that is all. Immediate advantage for one group of people. And that is why we create so many difficulties for ourselves. But the immediate solution may actually be to our great disadvantage from the long-term point of view. Sometimes you have to find an immediate solution, but you have to keep in the background of your mind the long-term solution. From the immediate point of view, it is a great advantage to act as the animal man, to go to this, to do, you know, just seek pleasure. Remember John Coates used to say in his talks, and I think there is a point of importance there, that most people live just to eat, to sleep, to reproduce, to enjoy. But then all the animals are doing that. So in what way is the human being different? Well, we can live like that. That's the immediate thing. The poor animals can do that. But that is not the role of the human being. So the human being has to understand himself, what he is destined for, what is his potential. Is he merely meant to survive, either individually or as a species, and incidentally get as much enjoyment as possible? Or is there something else within him which has to blossom out? And again, theosophy has something very important to speak about. Theosophy in the large sense of the term. Because if we do not know what we need to fill our heads with information and appear to be cleverer than others, or is the purpose of our study, our discussion, of the lectures we give or listen to open our perspectives, to widen our horizon, so that we understand what humanity means. It's not easy. This brings this question of wisdom, because it is easy to say certain things. In fact, we can give glib answers to various questions. What is the problem of humanity? It is selfishness. How can selfishness be eradicated? By wisdom. It means nothing. We are merely saying words. But to realize deeply within ourselves that it is the very nature of our minds, which are separated, selfish, with all the implications of that word, if we understand that and we see what change has to be brought about, then there is some truth in our perception. Otherwise, it isn't truth, it is only words. And similarly, what do we mean by wisdom? It can also be another word. What is that wisdom, that awareness, which can free us from our selfishness? What is the way to it? What is the path to bring clarity on these things? In other words, to have some insights, one has to work very hard. We have worked very hard at the outer things. That is why there are spectacular successes. But we have given no attention to this question of human consciousness, of the tendencies which are so strong in us, the way to free of its condition. We haven't given our attention to it, not in a sustained way. And the work of the Theosophical Society, it seems to me, is to focus on these issues. Not just what I have said, but on all that is related to it. Otherwise, it isn't the work of the Theosophical Society. We can play around with a number of things which may be interesting. We can discuss how many types of fairies there are. We don't know a thing about it, but we may read different kinds of literature and organize meetings and tell people, and perhaps many more people will come to hear that. Or we can try to acquire certain powers imagine or pretend that we have them, collect people around us. If the Theosophical Society wanted to fool around, it could have a very large membership. But is that our purpose? There are people who say, why don't we have more members? Why don't we have more members? But the question is, what is the society to bring about? What does it exist for? And are the people who are coming in, those who are wholehearted or at least understand this purpose, this central purpose, which I believe is regeneration. Regeneration means a completely new life. And that is what humanity needs. Not, as we said, the same pattern, the patching up, little solutions here and there, drifting along. It's too dangerous now to drift. If we don't meet this challenge, it's possible that nature, being mighty, may do something about it, but we won't be helping ourselves. And so this whole question is open to our discussion and serious consideration. And I think if the worldwide membership of the society really took this up and also communicated to others that this may be the crucial question for humanity as a whole, we may be doing some good and fulfilling the purpose for which the society was founded, and incidentally benefiting ourselves also.